Powell, saying there was still a long way to go to tame inflation in the world's largest economy. While Britons continue to contend with the soaring cost of food and energy, would this be the last rate hike by the UK's central bank? Syed Purizam, London.
Turkey's pro-Kurdish People's Democratic Party and its allies have announced that they will not field a candidate to run against President Erdogan on May 14. HDP co-chairwoman Pervin Buldan made the announcement in a presser for the Labour and the Freedom Alliance, which includes the HDP, the Turkish Workers' Party and other leftist parties. Although it was not made clear during the conference, the announcement means the HDP will support the opposition National Alliance candidate Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu.
We will fulfill our historical responsibility against the one-man rule. We are determined to hold this government, which continues a rule based on poverty and corruption. The HDP and its allies will not nominate a candidate for May 14.
The announcement is considered a major setback for Turkish President Erdogan, as the HDP is the third largest party in parliament. President Recep Tayyip Erdogan slammed the opposition bloc's cooperation with the pro-PKK People's Democratic Party, saying alliances should focus on common principles rather than negotiations over seats.
The announcement by the Kurdish alliance that they will not nominate a candidate will make this election difficult for President Erdogan, which means that the Kurdish votes will go to Kılıçdaroğlu. Yesterday, we also heard President Erdogan say that 17 of his ministers and his deputy will run for parliamentary elections to strengthen his party's position in these elections. Erdogan knows his position is not the strongest after the Kurdish alliance announcement and is trying to fix things around him to make sure he wins.
On Tuesday, the day before the announcement, Kılıçdaroğlu met with HDP leadership in the parliament building in Ankara, during which he made promises to remove restrictions on the Kurdish language and address other related issues. The May 14 election looks to be a tough one for the ruling party and its allies. Many say Kurdish voters could play the role of a kingmaker and help the opposition win this time. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
The United Nations headquarters in Geneva once again played host to the annual Human Rights Council session on Monday, where the UN Special Rapporteur to Iran released a report on women's rights situation inside the Islamic Republic. Predictably, his views sparked major dispute with Iran's delegation over accusations of mistreatment of women in recent months following Western-backed anti-Iran riots.
Advocacy for human rights is increasingly mistaken by some states and human rights mandate holders for their unwarranted and egotistic purposes, abusing the human rights mechanisms to single out and target those nations with independent foreign policy is void of any added value for protection of human rights.
As the envoys battled it out, two Iranian onlookers had a very real story of abuse, which had been largely ignored until now. Manager Safiyari and Elham Jalizavi, two Iranian nationals who suffered horrifically following terrorist attacks on Iranian soil. The culprits, notorious anti-Iran terrorist group the MKO, an obscure cult organization which currently receives significant Western support and even maintains a presence at the UN itself via NGOs.
By providing them asylum, Western countries violated the 1951 convention, enabling them to carry on all their human rights violations, which has in turn led to our rights being violated.
Safiyari was left wheelchair-bound at 17 after an MKO bomb attack targeted a market in 1985. Jalizavi was just 15 when her father was killed in their home by an MKO mortar attack in 1991. These are just two examples of the countless Iranian victims of MKO aggression. With the help of a sympathetic non-governmental organization, the Association for Defending Victims of Terrorism, their calls for justice have now reached the heart of the UN.
The MKO are a cult who commit these acts. Their members have been duped into cooperating with them. They've also been brainwashed. Their families too have suffered as a result. They too have fallen victim to the MKO.
They should be tried in court. not allowed to come here and claim innocence. We have even filed a lawsuit with French courts because many members live in France, but unfortunately the courts voted in their favour.
Despite past recognition of the MKO as terrorist organisation in the Western world, the US and its allies have performed a U-turn, now promoting them as legitimate opposition to the Islamic Republic, despite their many crimes against Iranian civilians.
The relationship between the Islamic Republic and the United Nations have gone through strained times, but it seems as if the UN is seemingly happy to continue providing a platform for anti-Iran terrorist organizations such as this. And as long as they do, it'll be hard to believe that ordinary Iranians will ever be able to fully trust this international institution. Robert Carter, Geneva.
Destination following his re-election.
This is in line with historical logic because we are each other's largest neighboring powers. We are also all-round strategic partners.
This is the 40th meeting between Putin and Xi during their presidency, which indicates the high and close level of cooperation between China and Russia for a long time. President Xi arrived in Moscow on March 24 for a three-day visit. He began his visit with an informal meeting with Vladimir Putin, which lasted almost 5 hours. On Tuesday, the head of state held an official meeting at the Grand Kremlin Palace. The priority in relations between Russia and China is trade and economic cooperation. In the documents signed by the two leaders, they vowed to multiply the volume of trade. It is expected that the Russian Federation and China will exceed the historical record trade volume of $200 billion this year. On February 24th, on the anniversary of the start of the Russian military operation in Ukraine, the Chinese Foreign Ministry presented a 12-point plan to resolve the conflict in Ukraine.
We believe that many of the provisions of the peace plan put forward by China are consonant with Russian approaches and can be taken as the basis for a peaceful settlement when they are ready for it in the West and in Kiev. However, so far we have not observed such readiness on their part.
China and Russia, as permanent members of the UN Security Council, also vowed to uphold the fundamental norms of international relations and build up constructive force for the formation of a multipolar world.
As for sending military equipment and weapons, military cooperation, China is unlikely to take drastic steps. First of all, China acts based on its own interests, not forgetting that relations with the Western world do not become bad. Otherwise, China itself faces sanctions. Its main trading partners are still in the West.
Putin and Xi Jinping also signed two joint documents setting long-term goals until 2030 across all tracks, a statement on plans for economic cooperation and a statement on plans to deepen partnership.
The Chinese president's three-day visit to Russia demonstrates the close historical relations between Beijing and Moscow. Any agreement made during Xi's trip can be regarded as a milestone given the fact that a new world order is being shaped. Marina Kartonova, Moscow.
Black community leaders demanding immediate action to reform Britain's largest police force, coinciding with an official report into the Metropolitan Police by victims' rights and social welfare expert. It was exactly that failure that prompted the report. In March 2021, Wayne Cousins, a serving Metropolitan Police officer, abducted, tortured, raped, and killed Sarah Everard. Cousins was jailed for life. His conviction prompted another woman to come forward, accusing another officer, David Carrick, convicted of raping 12 victims over 17 years. Police Commissioner Mark Rowley has welcomed the report, but stopped short of admitting the force he leads is institutionally racist.
We have racist, misogynist, and homophobes in the organization, and it's not just about individuals. We have systemic failings, management failings, and cultural failings. The reason, and I respect Louise using that term, the reason I don't use it, I think it's a very ambiguous term.
On the whole, the report is condemning of this big organization, pointing to the fact that it has lost public confidence and consent, and that it has to wake up, own up to the problems plaguing it, and engage in wholesale across-the-board reforms.
Black community leaders, though, say they're concerned the reform may not go far enough.
This is just another report saying the same thing that's been said for decades now in this here country. The Metropolitan Police is institutionally racist. policing is harmful, it's misogynistic, it is homophobic. And for me as a black woman, the police, the Met Police, is an anti-black organization, anti-black racism organization.
In February, the charity inquest found that black people are 7 times more likely than white people.
Black people are 5 times more likely to be tasered than white people. You could go on and on and on.
The report is a wake-up call for the Metropolitan Police. Its author, as do these minority community leaders, says her recommendations are not to be picked from, but to be implemented. Without them, she says, the force may need to be disbanded. Saipur is up, London.
On Monday, head of Iran's Strategic Council on Foreign Relations, Kamal Karazi, met Syria's Foreign Minister Faisal al-Maqdad in Damascus and discussed regional and international developments, renewing Tehran's support for the Syrian people, army, and government. Karazi then delivered a lecture at Al-Assad Library. He said the Ukrainian conflict will lead to a new world order. He noted that the U.S. and its allies failed in their campaign to defeat Syria, asserting their intervention killed millions of people and spread extremism. Karazi said the West was willing to reconcile with President Assad if Syria had cut relations with Iran, hailing the joint policy of resistance between Damascus and Tehran.
The power of a country is expressed by its capabilities and steadfastness against pressures. This fact has been interpreted by the policy of resistance adopted by Iran and Syria across half of a century. This sparked hostilities from Israel and the West. The joint Syrian-Iranian experience proves that the main factor behind power is being able to resist international hegemony and confront arrogant world powers' greedy policies.
It's difficult today to find a state that shares similar policies with Syria. The common point that brings Syria and Iran together is supporting Palestine. Syria and Iran almost share identical viewpoints in all subjects.
Karazi clarified that the Iranian diplomacy is aimed at enhancing Iran's national security and defense capabilities. He stressed that Iran did not make the mistake made by regional countries of being reliant in their security on others. On the recent Iranian-Saudi talks, Karazi stressed that dialogue is capable of solving all problems without any foreign intervention.
Iran considers Saudi Arabia a big and influential country in the Islamic world. None of the two states should ignore the other. Both the states should use their capabilities to enhance regional security. Adopting cooperation and increasing dialogue instead of confrontation will end all crises without any foreign intervention.
The top official called for the withdrawal of illegal foreign troops from Syria. He expressed Iran's support to forming a strong government in Lebanon. He asserted that Israel's main goal is to destabilize the region, affirming Iran will continue to confront such efforts.
Iran's foreign policy has been a key boon to creation of balanced strategies to deal with regional challenges based on dialogue. Karazi reiterated during his visit that Syrian-Iranian relations have set an example of a successful alliance and resistance against U.S. and Western hegemony. Muhammad Ali, Damascus.
Sound the flute, now it's mute. Merry, merrily, merrily to welcome in the year. Those were the words of William Blake, but Iranian peoples have been literally doing so more than 3,000 years prior to that 18th century poem, welcoming spring with Nowruz celebrations.
Nowruz is an ancient tradition. It literally means new day, and this is how we celebrate our new year, which begins on the first day of spring and usually falls on March 21st. Nowruz and the arrival of spring remind us that it is time for new beginnings and leaving behind our sorrows.
While many people start their New Year holidays a couple of days before Nowruz, the streets are jammed with last-minute shoppers. After all, no matter what the circumstances, you can't have a Nowruz without a half-seen table.
I personally prefer shopping for the half-seen table just a few hours before Nowruz. It's both fun and games. Aside from the Nowruz shopping that I enjoy, I also love the hustle and bustle and the festive New Year's mood in the streets.
Iranians have their own special way of welcoming spring, and one of the most prominent of these traditions is setting the Hafsin table, an arrangement of seven symbolic items that start with the sound S in Farsi, representing regrowth, health, and prosperity.
There are also other things we do to welcome spring, including a major spring cleaning of our homes, shopping for new clothes, and most importantly, visiting one another, short visits that are usually reciprocated.
The Nowruz festive events culminate in Sizdabedar, the 13th day of the new year, which is also the last day of the Nowruz holidays. It is traditionally spent outdoors, picnicking and playing games. The holiday is also referred to as Nature Day.
Happy Nowruz, or as Iranians would say, we wish you a thousand years better than this year. Gisumi Shahmadi, Tehran.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing Him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing Him. Terrors fall low in awe of Him. Faces are humbled in fear of Him. And everything mighty yields to His mightiness. So to Thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually and methodically. And may His blessings be upon His messenger endlessly, and His salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in Thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from Thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then failed to keep for Thee. I ask Thee concerning the complaints of Thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among thy servants, of a handmaid from among thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him. I ask thee, O he who owns all objects of need, which are granted by his will and hastened to his desire, that thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makest the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that thou willst, and givest me mercy from thee. Forgiveness decreases thee not, and giving injuries thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from thee: the facility to obey thee at its beginning, and the favor of thy forgiveness at its end. O he who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sins.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome. Now, since he took office 6 years ago, the French President Emmanuel Macron has hardly had a moment of plain sailing. First came the Yellow Vests, whose often violent protests against taxes and economic inequality rocked France for months. Then the global pandemic, followed by the Ukraine war. Yet Macron has never been in as much trouble as in recent days. His decision on March 16th to force through a widely unpopular pension reform bill without a final vote by the National Assembly or the Parliament sparked one of the most serious crises in the history of France. In this edition of Spotlight, we will take a look at how these challenges have been testing the French government's commitment to human rights and how, to save his pension reform bill, Macron has lost France. To discuss that, we are joined by Mustafa Traoré, academic and political commentator, who's joining us from Paris. And Don DeVar, activist and commentator, joining us from New York.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Thank you very much to both of you gentlemen. Let's begin with Mr. Traoré. Now, over the last week in particular, we've seen protests breaking out almost every day, more than a million people taking part in these protests. And still Macron is insisting on following through with this pensions reform. Why is that?
I think there are different reasons to explain his position and his decision. He's now in his second mandate, so he knows that he won't be elected anymore. So this is his last years as the French president. And he's got his political views, his political plans, and now is the best moment for him to put into practice, to implement all the laws, all the decisions he wants for France. Of course, many people are disappointed. Many people do not approve of the reform, especially because with this reform, the pension, the retirement age is going to be pushed to 64 instead of 62. And so it means two more years. And this is, of course, for when you started work at a very young age. But for those who started quite late, those who, for example, went to university and entered the working life quite late, for them it's going to be 67. So he knows that now is the moment, and this is why he used this thing, which is part of the French constitution, the 49.3. So it is thanks to the 49.3, so which means that there were no debate. There was no debate in parliament. They did not vote. The MPs, the French MPs, did not vote. And he just passed the law. And he is doing and putting into place the policies of those who elected him. Though, I mean, those who elected him, those who put him in power. This is my opinion.
Well, thank you very much for that. Yeah, let's bring in Mr. Don DeBar from New York. Thank you very much, sir, for joining us. Now, two-thirds of the French oppose this law, and the approval rating of Macron is now at around 28%. It's really a dismal popularity rate, actually. And of course, France is one of those countries that prides itself as a role model of democracy. Democracy, as we say, the government of the people, by the people, for the people. And it seems that Macron is not even listening to these people.
Well, it's been interesting listening to Macron speak now after listening to him lecture Iran and places all over the world on how to treat protesters. And we're hearing, I don't know what the reports are on the ground, but I'm hearing from news agencies and people that I know in Paris that, in fact, some of the police and fire officials have joined the protesters at this point. You know, if you look at the historical context here, I don't know if you want to go back to 1789, to the actual French Revolution, to the Paris Commune in 1871, or to Paris in 1968. And we're talking, these have always been really important in revolutionary history in the world. The terms right and left, for example, applied to politics come out of the French Revolution of 1789. The historical context has always revolved around class issues, you know, create these divisions, basically the society is not providing for large sectors of the population who are being more and more immiserated, that produces these outcomes. Now, the particular thing here with the pensions is only, you know, one of a number of things that have happened over the last 40 years with the pauperization of working people across Europe, with the austerity and the removal of the safety nets, et cetera. Looking across the globe, for example, Russia and China, those two horrible places for people to live. The retirement age is 55 for women and 60 for men. Somehow they managed to provide that. Here in the United States even, I took retirement on Social Security at 62. French people have had, certainly since the 70s, a halfway decent and comparable situation, and it's one of the last things that have remained out of the, well, you know, various things that were fought for and won over the last 150, 200 years. Macron is now taking that away. And the fact that it's happening in his second term and he's bypassing the legislature to do it should be a lesson to people looking at a second term for Joe Biden here in the United States, by the way.
Thank you very much. Now, Mr. Traore, Celia Belin, who runs the Paris office of the European Council on Foreign Relations, which is a think tank, says that there is a feeling that the president is not listening to his people at this moment, and the political legitimacy of Macron's second mandate is being called into question. What is your opinion?
Yes, I think this is perfectly right, but I think this is not new. There's nothing new in it. We know that President Macron never listened to the people. We saw it with the Yellow Vest movement 3 or 4 years ago, just before the COVID-19 crisis. So it is not something new. We know that he's done, and this is why he was elected. This is why some decided to have him in power. They prepared him as a candidate because they knew that with him, he was the only person who could, let's say, shape the French nation as they wanted to. And this is now, now we've got to. But it is it is something that the French people also accepted. They had the choice. They had the choice, even if many people say they did not have the choice. It was between Marine Le Pen and him. When I say he had the choice, I mean that there was a first round of the presidential elections. In the French presidential election, there was a first round. They did not pick up the right candidates. So now they have to accept it.
So, Mr. Debar, you did, of course, mention that Macron has been lecturing here and there other countries regarding the issue of human rights. Now France itself is actually using excessive force against these protesters who are mainly peaceful protesters. There are not that many reports of violence as far as the protests are concerned. And this actually raises a lot of question marks here, especially when we go back just a couple of months when Macron even held a meeting with people who were supporting the riots in Iran. He actually held a meeting, an official meeting, with these people who have no legitimacy and do not represent any Iranian group or party or political faction or any kind of group, as you can say. What is your opinion regarding that?
Yeah, there's no mass constituency for that at all. This is, you know, you have these attempted color revolutions that take place from time to time. You had a pair of them in Iran. I think it was 2009 was the earlier one. We had one in 5 years ago, for example, in Nicaragua. There was an attempted one there. There was one in Cuba over the last few years. And let's go back to the image of John McCain and Victoria Nuland and a host of other actual American government officials standing in front of a mob that was killing police officers and burning down buildings and exhorting them on to further, actually, ultimately, to overthrowing the government, with the demands from the outside that those people respect the rights of the protesters. This, you know, Macron was one of those voices, and the members of his party, Sarkozy and others over the whatever period you want to talk about. And let's talk also about what happened in Libya and what they tried to do in Syria. Well, you know, this is something that's a common problem. And then finally, in May of 2018, I marched with the Yellow Vests in Paris. And, you know, there were maybe 100,000 people that were out there. They were been mobilizing for years. Again, the context is a gradually intensifying over a period of almost 4.5 decades now, austerity and increasing poverty and powerlessness that's been exacerbated over the last year and a half, by the way, by the consequences of war in Ukraine that has both austerity because of the need to fund NATO and buy weapons and such, but also the fallout in terms of inflation and fuel prices and fertilizers and food and everything else. The people on the ground are hurting, and their governments are not responding. And what happened? Basically, when the powers who are governing can no longer govern in the old ways and the people not be governed in the old ways, they call that a revolutionary condition. And I'm looking at the history of France, and I'm looking at the fact that there was a problem over the condition of the people in 1789. There was a problem with the way that the military felt they were being treated in 1871. And then you had an illegal war in Vietnam that was being protested and the response against protesters in 1968. You have all of those things operating now and not much room to blow air back into the system. So this could be really catch fire. And these conditions exist across Europe now as well.
And do you believe that from now on Macron can actually ever talk about democracy ever, particularly on the international scale?
Well, not credibly. When people have no shame, they'll do anything, okay? And, you know, the Western political class has demonstrated over and over that they have no shame. But I don't know who would accept a lecture from him. Certainly no one in China, Russia, Iran, you know, and by the way, now Saudi Arabia as well, and around the world, that the territory that exists for the exclusion zone for the United States to banish people from has shrunken almost to the size of the United States at this point. There's a new world being born. It's actually being midwifed by the United States by forcing the rest of the world to do this.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, we will get back to that new world order that you just pointed out. But let's ask this question from Mr. Traoré now. Macron's legitimacy outside France is suffering as well. Our other guest from New York, Mr. Don DeBar, did point to a few issues. And also on Friday, a long-planned state visit to France by Britain's King Charles III was also postponed.
Yes, yes, of course. And I think it is a good thing for some African countries that are trying to emancipate themselves from the chains of France. Like I am thinking here of countries like Mali and Burkina Faso, because now Macron is in a weaker position. France won't be able to lecture them on some issues in Mali. So I think this is a good point for the emancipation of some African countries. So, in fact, what I think is that maybe Macron was a good president for the Africans because it is during his presidency that many countries are going, African countries have the possibility to set free from the French chains. So that's the positive thing, maybe.
Mr. Traoré, Macron himself claims that this was the ground of why he was re-elected. How do you think Macron will go down in history?
He will be seen as a liberal, and he came to shape France. He was the only candidate who was able to do it, to stand the pressure of the people, and this is why he was elected. I think that when you look at the French society, if you want to have an idea about what the French society is going to be like in 10 years or 20 years' time, you just have to look at the United States or Britain. Very liberal. And there's no way we can escape this one. I know it's not good, but there's no way we can escape this one. And the disappointing thing is that it seems that the French people have not realized it. If they had realized it earlier, they would have been better prepared. But now I think it's too late. I think the time to change things was when they had the Yellow Vest movement. It seems that this organization was not really respected. It was maybe because of the media as well. But the thing is that they missed the train.
So, Mr. Dondebar, I would also like to have your response to this question as well, particularly in the light of what you just mentioned as a new world order emerging. How do you think France will be remembered in this new world order where the Western countries, Europe and the United States in particular, do not have the final say anymore?
Well, people are beginning to speak. I've noticed this over the last month or so. Not just about the rise of the multipolar world and the new order, but they're looking also at the close of the colonial period that's lasted about 500 years, centered in Europe and the last 100 years or so also in North America. From that context, you know, you're looking again at sort of losing the domination of Western political thinking. I had mentioned earlier at the French Revolution, the terms left and right, for example, first were applied to politics. Members of the National Assembly that sat to the left of the presiding chair of this assembly were supporters of the revolution, opponents of the king, and the king's supporters sat to the right. People have been grappling with the question of right and left right now since the fall of the Soviet Union, but particularly in the last couple of years, because so many of the issues that were identified with one side or the other in Western politics don't fit the current conditions. You have people that are against globalization and for example, war on Russia and China. Many of them identify as being of the right. And those who are opposed to the global corporate economic behemoth also do so, many of them, from a perspective almost of Adam Smith rather than the various interpretations of Karl Marx. And so the whole period seems to be coming to an end, and a new world born, not just multipolar with respect to the traditional last period since World War II, but also truly post-colonial, where the centers of power rest with the people on the ground globally.
So, Mr. Traore, back to the issue of this whole pension reforms bill. You're still waiting in France for the Constitutional Council to pass this bill before it becomes law. How do you expect this to unfold?
I think that is going to pass for me. I do not see it being rejected. For me, it's nice to demonstrate, it's not nice to protest, but I'm very skeptical about what's going to happen next. I think that it's too late. It's too late, unfortunately. And it is his second mandate. He's got no reason to step back. There's no reason for Macron to. He's got nothing to lose. So this is what we have to understand. The protest and the reason why people are demonstrating is just for it not to happen again. But this time, it is too late. And I think that in a few weeks' time, you will have people who are going to, because business has to go on. Okay, you work, and if you do not work, you won't be paid. You have lots of people who are employees. Some have their businesses. So I do not see. It is too late. There's nothing we can do. It is past now. We have to be very vigilant for next time, because we know that today we have 2 years added to the retirement age, but we know that maybe in 5 years' time we might have one more year and one more year. Like people from my generation, I know that by the time I get to 67, the law would change and they would ask me to go to 70 years old to retire. We all know this. Okay, so now they have to demonstrate, they have to protest, and they have to be more vigilant. Okay, and not get lost in very fake debates, as it was the case in the previous elections. In fact, if you look at these last 10 years, in all elections we had fake debates about immigration, headscarf. No, these are not the real issue. The real issue was retirement. What do you want for France as a nation? Okay. So this is one fact. It is very sad, But I think the first people to blame are the French people. The French, those who voted, they had a choice. They had the choice between Mélenchon. Okay, no, they did not vote for Mélenchon. Okay, so now they have to accept it.
So, Mr. DeBar, Mr. Taroy did mention that Macron is at a point now where he really doesn't have much to lose. This is something that we've heard from a lot of pundits over the past couple of days. But as you mentioned so yourself, Macron does have a lot to lose still. He has France to lose and, of course, the reputation of France as an advocate of democracy. So how do you think this will go down? How much do you agree with Mr. Taroy in order to wrap this up?
I would have a different focus. I think what we're seeing is the coming, growing irrelevance of the existing political structures to the lives of the people that live in France and elsewhere. And I think that what we're talking about here is a fundamental decision about allocation of resources inside the society, how much of it is going to be set aside for the people that produce the value, the working people. I don't think they have any more room to give in terms of not having anything to lose. We're talking about, for Macron, his political career. For most people in France, in Paris, they're identifying with it, for example. They're talking about the very survival. You know, this past winter, there was the question of whether or not to have fuel or food. If it's going to go up again another year or two, this and that, et cetera, things are going to get more intensive. You know, they become starker and starker choices. And there comes a point in time when the people decide that their own survival is more important than the forms of the existing government, and they toss it over. And the French have a tradition of doing that, and I think we're looking at the beginning of that now.
And do you agree with that, Mr. Taroy? A quick response.
I think that in terms of reputation, Macron does not care. And I think that this is the way the world goes. Now, if you look at every country, it's the same. Britain is the same. It is the decline of the West. This is what we have to admit. And there is a new order that is coming to life. And this is what we see. So the American society, the British society, the French society, all the West is about to collapse. And we are in it right now, and we have to accept it. There is a new order coming. And things are going to be different.
Things are going to be different, and Mr. Dondebar also agrees, I assume. We don't have much time left. Thank you very much to both of you, gentlemen. Mustafa Taroré, academic and political commentator from Paris, and Mr. Dondebar, activist and commentator from New York. Thanks for sharing your thoughts and views on this edition of The Spotlight.
From east to west, throughout the vast land of Iran, you're listening to IRIB English Radio. The limelight.
Efforts are underway around the world to topple the hegemony of dollar. The Russian president has recently said Moscow will cooperate with its partners to develop a safe system for international settlements. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of RT wrote in this regard, the US and other Western currencies will inevitably lose their leading position in global cross-border transactions, Russian President Vladimir Putin has said recently. Delivering his annual address to the Federal Assembly, the head of state said that Moscow would cooperate with its allies to build a secure system of international settlements that are not dependent on the dollar or the euro. According to Putin, the current policies of Western states are causing the U.S. dollar and the euro to lose their universality in international payments. He explained that Russia's former Western partners are forcing Moscow to cut settlements in dollars and other Western currencies. In December, Putin stated that the share of the ruble transactions in Russia's foreign trade had doubled since the beginning of 2022 and now accounted for one-third of the country's settlements. He projected that the use of national currencies in place of the U.S. dollar and the euro in trade with Russia's international partners would continue to grow. The process of de-dollarizing the Russian economy started back in 2014, when Western nations introduced the initial sanctions against Moscow over Crimea's reunification with Russia, which was formerly part of Ukraine. Sanctions imposed since the start of the military operation in Ukraine have sped up the process, particularly after over $300 billion in Russian foreign exchange reserves and other assets were frozen by the U.S. and its allies. Al-Mayadeen English, meanwhile, wrote, Russia and Egypt consultations for de-dollarization is underway. Consultations on the transition to national currencies as a means of exchange between Egypt and Russia are underway, according to Russian ambassador to Egypt, Georgi Borisenko. The purpose of these talks is to move away from the dollar and thus will help to avoid the arbitrariness on the part of Western countries that use their own currencies for geopolitical purposes. According to the ambassador, from the spring of 2022, intensive consultations have been ongoing regarding the transition to national currencies in settlements in mutual trade. Borisenko also lauded Egypt for resisting Western pressure and continuing to expand its relations with Russia. Despite all these pressures, Egypt remains faithful to the traditions of friendship between our countries laid down during the presidency of Gamal Abdel Nasser and continues to actively interact with Russia in the economic, cultural spheres and various international political platforms, Borisenko said in an interview with Sputnik. As the world moves away from the U.S. dollar as a world reserve asset, dollars will be dumped globally, causing a tsunami of inflation in the United States as the currency returns to American shores. Interest rates will rise accordingly, followed by collapse in asset prices, which would be used to usher in central bank digital currencies and the Great Reset. This dire scenario is the forecast of Andy Schettman, president and owner of Miles Franklin and an expert on monetary and economic history. Schettman, who has 3 decades of experience in the precious metal sector, said that BRICS, including Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa coalition, could lead the charge to develop their own reserve currency, which would compete against the U.S. dollar. He said, "The BRICS are, I think, coalescing against the dollar, the perceived hypocrisy and hegemony of the dollar. We've already been told that the BRICS currency would be pegged to gold or to commodities, the assumption being that gold is one of the commodities." The BRICS are meeting in Durban, South Africa in August, and one of their agenda items is the development of an alternative to the U.S. dollar. Skidman told Michelle McCurry, lead anchor and editor-in-chief at Kitco News, that the dollar's weaponization during the Russia-Ukraine conflict has hastened the move to dump dollar. He suggested that the Western sanctions on Russia, as well as expelling Russia from the SWIFT payment system, has had a chilling effect, deterring other nations from using the dollar. Skidman observed, since the weaponization of the dollar in 2022, the de-dollarization seems to be spinning much, much faster.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio.